This podcast is a production of KCRW.com.
From KCRW in Santa Monica, I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner, and this is The Business.
So you still want to do the show business, and you think that you got what it takes? I mean, you really got to rap and be all that, but prepare yourself for the breaks, check it out.
This week on The Business, Ang Lee turned a movie about gay cowboys into Oscar gold and box office green. But can his new film overcome a rating of NC-17? Hey, that rhymed. We'll talk to James Shamus, the producer and writer of Lee's latest, Lust Caution. Plus, the high-risk gamble of self-distributing a low-budget film. But first, it's the Hollywood News Caravan. Y'all are listening to the show you wish you knew how to quit. It's The Business from NPR. The fate of NBC Universal will be decided soon, after the Beijing Olympics this August. The Olympics, of course, will be broadcast on NBC, and the ratings for the summer sports spectacular will ultimately help determine the fate of the network. NBC is just a fly speck on the windshield of its parent company, General Electric, but it's still worth an estimated $40 billion. The network has been the subject of repeated sale rumors because of its lagging performance and the allegedly awkward fit with GE's industrial and financial businesses. I don't know. I mean, ER and medical imaging equipment? The bionic woman and industrial automation? Heroes and nuclear weapons? Seems like a pretty good fit to me. Meanwhile, as GE ponders the fate of their TV business, the record business was reeling from twin shocks to the system last week. The Wall Street Journal reported that Madonna is using the power of goodbye with her longtime record label Warner Music. She'll sign a new $120 million recording and touring deal with concert promoter Live Nation. Madonna will receive a signing bonus of about $18 million and roughly a $17 million advance for each of her next three albums. She'll be paid partly in Live Nation stock. Simultaneously, Radiohead also made headlines by announcing they're selling their new album exclusively online and at whatever price consumers want to pay. Easy to do when you already have $1 trillion in the bank, but it does hearken some kind of sea change. The New York Times' Jeff Leed spoke to the band's manager, Bryce Edge, who said that, quote, "Digital technology has reintroduced the age of the troubadour. You're worth what people are prepared to give you in the digital age because they can get it for nothing." End quote. Of course, getting it for nothing can come with a price. A mother of two found that out the hard way earlier this month when she was ordered to pay over $200,000 for illegally downloading 24 songs. At $9,200 a song, that starts to make iTunes look like kind of a steal. Elsewhere, Blinks, the UK-based online video search company, will allow consumers to make money from the videos they show on their blogs, social network sites, or homepages if they agree to embed advertising in the video. By combining two internet trends, online video and social networking, with a money-making opportunity, Blinks hopes to better compete with YouTube. The timing couldn't be better, especially for Hollywood celebrities who used to be motivated to hide bad behavior rather than upload it. For example, last week, David Hasselhoff was forced to do 24 hours in detox after relapsing on booze. A video had leaked to TV tabloids, showing Hasselhoff in a booze-laden violation of a judge's order against drinking, part of a child custody dispute between the actor and his ex-wife. Geez, if he'd put that clip on the web himself with ads from Blinks, he'd have made enough to buy a whole new family. Which brings us to the quote of the week from Hoff's fellow celebrity drunk, Lindsay Lohan. America's troubled sweetheart told OK Magazine last week that her most recent stint in rehab was, quote, "a sobering experience." Out of the mouths of babes. And I do mean babes. And that's the Hollywood News Caravan. Coming up later in the show, the producers of the film outsourced insourced distribution. But next, Lust Caution gets an NC-17. And it wasn't for the caution. The NC-17 rating is given to films that, in the view of the MPAA's rating board, quote, "most parents would consider patently too adult for their children 17 and under." The NC-17 replaced the X rating in 1990 because the X had become too associated with porn, and the MPAA wanted to find a rating for serious movies with adult themes. You know, like showgirls. But many newspapers won't run ads for NC-17 films, and many theaters won't show them. Ang Lee's latest film may change all that. The director of films featuring flying swordsmen, nihilistic suburbanites, and gay cowboys now brings you Lust, Caution. It's a lush period piece set in occupied World War II-era Shanghai, in which a girl is recruited to kill a Japanese collaborator. Her relationship with the collaborator becomes emotional and physical, and it is for brief but intense sex scenes that the film was given an NC-17 rating by the MPAA. Lee and his producers decided that the sex scenes could not be cut without seriously compromising the integrity of the film. Remarkably, both Focus Features, the film's distributor, and Universal, which owns Focus, backed them up. It's remarkable since the NC-17 rating, plus the fact that it's in Chinese, make Lust, Caution a really tough sell in the States. We have a uniquely qualified guest to talk about the business and cultural issues raised by Lust, Caution. James Seamus is the president of Focus Features and the producer of Lust, Caution. But he's also a longtime creative collaborator with Ang Lee. In fact, they've worked together for so long that he refers to the two of them as, quote, an old married couple. Seamus wrote, co-wrote, or contributed to the scripts of the last 10 Ang Lee films, including his latest, Lust, Caution. James Seamus, welcome to the business.
Thank you.
Now, at what point did you realize that some of the scenes as written would be tough to get by the MPAA?
As written, I wrote them a lot the same way I wrote some of the fight scenes for Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. Whenever we got to a big fight scene, I stopped writing the screenplay and just plugged in one sentence, which was, they fight. So on Lust, Caution, it was a little bit more complicated because I did want to share with Ang and with the team how truly emotional and how truly I'd say transcendent the story was that you follow through these scenes. And so we did tend to describe a bit more. That said, nothing on the page would ever earn you an NC-17. That was Ang's vision and Ang's vision alone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so many former NC-17 movies, when they accept the rating, there aren't that many actually, but among them, it's the majority, tend to take on a very kind of macho, sensationalist spin. You know, they earn that NC-17 rating for the kind of pyrotechnics that they bring to the screen from a purely kind of scandalized point of view. And for Ang, it's almost the exact opposite. This is a very female-driven story. It's a story that women in particular respond very strongly to. And it's almost as if he earned the NC-17 for the emotions of those scenes far more than he did for anything that was just simply explicitly represented.
Mm-hmm. As you're filming this, and when you're there on set, did you discuss, you know, spending less on it as a result, knowing that things were headed down a more sexually evocative path?
No, at that point, you know, by the time we were in prep, there was no turning back. You've written the check.
There's no such thing as a little pregnant.
Yeah, yeah.
If you'll forgive the metaphor.
Exactly. No, absolutely. You got it. And at the same time, you know, part of the adventure of making movies with Ang is really the dare. You know, even in terms of writing screenplays for him and helping select material, and it's not as if you know exactly where things are going to land when you start a picture with Ang, and that's why the films work out, I hope, people think, so well.
So was the executive James Seamus sort of at odds with the screenwriter? I mean, do you even pretend to have the same hats on at the same time, or are you?
It's really funny. Ang always complains because I've written on so many of his movies, and of all of those I've worked as a producer on, and he always complains because we'll be on set and I'll say, you're losing the light. You spent too much time shooting the first half of the scene. Let's just cut the last page of the scene out. You don't really need it, and you can just cut to this. And he always looks at me with that kind of puppy-eyed look and says, but those are your precious words, you know. And I was going to say, yeah, well, I'm also the producer here. And clearly, having a kind of tripartite division of functions on this as a writer, producer, and executive at the film company, yes, the NC-17, as it loomed as a business decision as well as an aesthetic and political one. And yet, you know, if you're going to make Ang Lee movies, you better be in the business of making movies as good as you can make them. And sometimes the best version of the movie requires that you got to tackle a problem like an NC-17. you know, and that's what we did here. We just took it on the chin. When I sat down with him and went over his first pass assembly cut, you know, that very first stage of the sketching out of the movie, having already, of course, know what was coming with the dailies earlier on, the conversation was not, you know, hey, dude, you're about to cost me a small fortune, but let's walk through the consequences of this. Let's make sure that you, Aang, are aware of what issues are going to be raised by making the film that you're making right now. And I have to say, I couldn't have had that conversation, and with the collegiality we ended up having with, if I didn't know I had the backup also of my own parent company. You know, Focus is part of the larger Universal world. And knowing that people who were at that company were people who liked great movies and were very supportive of filmmakers and their visions.
You refer to it as the problem of an NC-17 rating. Did you fight with them over that designation?
No, we decided from day one, once I saw the assembly cut and worked our way through to Aang's final cut, the decision once it was made was that this is an NC-17 movie. This is a movie for adults. And if you're not an adult, then you shouldn't be watching the movie. I guess if the grown-ups go to the movie, I suppose the non-adults are at home surfing the internet for porn, but that's not my problem.
Right.
That's somebody else's. But you know, this is we had to say finally, let's just avoid the hypocrisy and the posturing and the doublespeak and accept the fact that Aang made a movie that is for grown-up people, and it's a very, very grown-up movie.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to James Shamus. He's the producer and writer of Ang Lee's new film, Lust Caution. It got the taboo NC-17 rating from the MPAA. So was there a sense that following the controversy and ultimate success of Brokeback Mountain, that a film from Ang Lee with lots of sexual content, or strong sexual content, I shouldn't overplay it that much because there isn't that much in it, but that might work for the film?
You know, what works for the film, works for the film, first and foremost. And what we market, especially at Focus and with Aang, is always the movie first. You know, you mentioned the controversy of Brokeback, but if you look back a couple of years ago with our release of that film, you'll notice we never courted the controversy, we never engaged it. When some, you know, right-wing homophobic lunatic fanatic got on some Fox TV news show, we ourselves never appeared to engage in the mudslinging.
It was always there.
You know, we always did the same thing. We said, this is a movie. It's a great movie. Come and enjoy it. If you have a problem with the content, go see a therapist or stay home. So, yes.
So that's a no then.
I think that would be a pretty straight, flat-out no, unless you've seen something different. In other words, if you've seen us marketing the way that kind of sells the sizzle.
Yeah, I guess what I'm asking is, behind the scenes, you know, as you're sitting in your office or in the editing bay with Ang Lee, are you having discussions that say, well, we can sell it? You know what I mean? Like that there's a feeling. I mean, you can disabuse me of this if I got
sure.
it wrong, but, you know, it would be kind of obtuse to say that sex doesn't sell. Was there a sense that, well, you know, maybe this will work for it?
Yeah, you know, again, if we had that discussion and made that decision, you probably would have noticed it now in the marketing.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about the marketing.
Sure.
How does the fact that the movie now has an NC-17 affect how it can be marketed?
You know, at first our assumption was that it would really constrain the marketing of the picture because we're operating the assumption that a number of print outlets as well as other electronic media outlets were loath to advertise NC-17 films. In fact, things have loosened up quite a bit over the years. And on the print side, there are very few print outlets that have any kind of blanket policy against NC-17 films now. So we have not found a lot of pushback on that front. And even on the television side, we've screened the film now for standards and practices and a number of places in cable networks to broadcast, and you know the first response we get from people is, "Oh my God, this is an amazing movie! Wow, let's talk about how we can be there in case you guys are going to widen out big enough to warrant advertising on television. So we haven't even gotten pushback there. There's nuance, of course. Maybe we should go after 10 p.m. or after 9 p.m. and this kind of programming as opposed to that kind of programming. But to be honest, those conversations have all been very warm and collegial, and it's great. We have a foreign language film. You tend not to advertise on television much for those things anyhow, so it was never that big an issue. Mm-hmm. Where we have run into issues is on two fronts. Number one is a general stigma about the NC-17 on the part of your consumer. And then the other area of pushback, of course, is on the exhibition side with certain of the movie theaters and a chain in particular, Cinemark, which is a great chain. They service a lot of a lot of markets out there, and they do have a blanket policy, a standing policy against showing NC-17 movies. I find the policy disturbing for a number of reasons, because they've turned down showing our movie on screens when they show movies like Saw and Hostel, and again, movies I'm not dissing at all. In fact, I enjoy a great, you know, horror porn movie like anybody else. But it seems odd to me that you would turn down Ang Lee's movie and in the same breath book a movie where, you know, live women are being dismembered and relieved of their breasts and other organs while, you know, on screen. And it just seems a little weird to me. And culturally and morally, I don't think there's that strong a case to be made against less caution when you're making money off of Saw 2.
Right. Or in this case, 4 now coming,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, exactly.
The MPAA has stated they'd like to change the stigma you're referring to. How does this film play into that now? I mean, what are you having any conversations with them about, you know, that this is a test case and that maybe what?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I don't even think that the film is really necessarily a test case. It is just incrementally one more moment in the culture when a little bit of the hypocrisy is being shed and a little bit of the discussion moves forward. So, yes, we certainly gave the MPAA a heads up about we were coming in with the movie. We accepted the rating within seconds, which I think was a little surprising, probably, for the ratings board. When's the last time studio goes, NC-17, cool, let's take it. And we've kept everybody in the loop about what our intentions for the picture are, and we're hopeful. Look, the film, to give you an idea of how odd this discussion is in terms of the culture globally, I can take you overseas for just a second.
Well, that was going to be my next question. How does the rest of the world react to an NC-17 rating? So let's go there.
Yeah, I mean, you can start with Asia, where one would think the reaction would be fairly allergic. The film has just opened in Hong Kong and in Taiwan about a week and a half ago, and it is on track to probably be the single most important event in Chinese cinema history. One of the biggest commercial hits in history. I mean, it's doing numbers. It's beating Pirates of the Caribbean in Taiwan. These are numbers that are literally getting in that close to Titanic realm over there. And not only that, but those numbers represent not just business, but a huge cultural event. This has been front page news for a month. The picture, and it's just the movie. The thing you've got to talk about when you're talking about where Asian culture is these days. It's a gigantic event. And by the way, in Hong Kong and Taiwan, the film is released in its integral original version, uncut, uncensored, no discussion.
None. James
Shamus
is the head of Focus Features, a Universal company, and the co-producer, co-writer, and frequent collaborator with Ang Lee on Lust Caution. James Shamus, thanks for being on The Business.
Well, thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it.
Lust Caution is now in theaters in the top 20 American markets. After a short break, a lawyer tries to fix his own broken leg. You're listening to The Business from NPR. You're listening to The Business, and I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner. A small Seattle company produced a romantic comedy with a conscience called Outsourced.
Todd, we decided to restructure order fulfillment, offshore the whole department. We need you in India.
I'm not going to India to train my own replacement.
All you need to do is visit the call center and make sure the new guy's up to speed.
Bro, what is that?
Oh, that is just a cow. Must have wandered in. 1 minute.
Basically, you people need to learn about America. Hold your nose, flatten a vowel, like Chicago.
Chicago.
They thought they had a winner and took it on the festival circuit, where it was received warmly. But distributors were a little cooler. And after running the numbers, the producers decided to distribute the film themselves. And we're not talking about renting a theater in Scottsdale for a week. They hired ad and PR people, web people, and all the expertise you need for a real, honest-to-God, multi-city release. But even with this kind of help, a producer deciding to distribute his film is a little like a lawyer deciding to fix his own broken leg. Making films and distributing them are just two very different disciplines. In fact, the great Peter Bogdanovich tried and failed miserably to self-distribute his film, They All Laughed, in 1981. He was later quoted as saying, "I was a babe in the woods. It takes deep pockets, a well-oiled network, and a lot of experience. That's why they have distributors," end quote. Even with money and knowledge, the system is stacked against you. But in the internet age, the playing field may be becoming a little more level. The business producer Matt Holzman spoke to David Skinner, the owner of Seattle-based Shadowcatcher Entertainment, the producer and now distributor of Outsourced.
David Skinner, welcome to the business.
Thanks very much. Nice to be here.
So now you have decided to distribute your film Outsourced yourself. Tell me why you made that decision.
Well, it was probably the most excruciating business decision I've ever had to make, and I've been in a number of different businesses. And it really came down to what we fundamentally thought made good sense for the company. We had had an offer from Miramax at Toronto, where we premiered the film at the festival about over a year ago, where it had 3 sold-out screenings and one of the toughest tickets to get. And the offer from Miramax came that they really weren't interested in distributing at all. They really wanted the remake rights. And after 7 or 8 emails, we made it clear to them that we were respectfully declining on that. We felt it had a good future. We were in negotiations for the foreign rights and thought we'd had a good chance to sell it domestically. But that proved not to be true. In fact, we...
No, wait. Now, so they wanted to buy the film just so that they could remake it.
Yeah.
Why not just buy the remake rights?
We didn't want to give it away. We thought we had a great upside. We thought we had a great film, and we just didn't want to give it to them. We had done a deal with Miramax in its previous incarnation.
With Smoke Signals, right?
Smoke Signals, that's correct.
Right.
And a 20-year licensing deal with Miramax that came up later, basically when they offered us a high 6-figure number for the domestic rights, really didn't make sense to us based on the fact they really didn't want to release it wide nationally, because only a Seattle theatrical release was allowed, where we would basically raise the P&A money. We would get a 10% bump perhaps from that, and then we would split the profits with them 50-50 after that, and no assurance that we could basically release it theatrically anywhere else in the country.
They're going to pay you a little bit of money. They're going to open it just in Seattle, and that basically you're going to have to put the money up for the advertising and the prints,
right.
And then after that, you're going to share 50-50 in the profits.
Right.
Okay, that doesn't seem like much of a deal.
Didn't us.
So it didn't. So it doesn't seem like an excruciating decision. It seemed like you were kind of forced into having distributed the film yourself.
Look, a high 6-figure number, and you back out some deliverables, Matt, leaves you with some money that you can put in your pocket and concentrate on other opportunities. That's why our attorney told us to take it. That's why our producer's rep told us to take the deal. That's why everybody who was looking at the minimum guarantees that were being offered to other films said, "Geez, this is a pretty good deal. Why don't you take the money and run?"
Now, how much is it going to cost, and what does it involve distributing it yourself?
Well, good question. We figured that we'd need to raise at least $1 million to get out a reasonable hybridized strategy consisting of releasing it in New York, in L.A., which are the 2 big media markets. We released it in Austin because that's where Truly India is based, and we thought it would do well there with Dell and high-tech companies. We released it in...
Say that again?
Truly Indy had 5 of the theaters out of the 15 or so that we eventually placed the film in, so they were one of our distributors, and this, along with Lantern Lane, really our producer's rep of the deal, who got the other, 10 theaters or so, Limley, a Landmark, and some independent theater owners. But we have basically cobbled together, as I say, a kind of hybrid strategy within the theatrical distribution community, which we knew would be a lost leader, but we thought that would serve basically the online campaign because of word of mouth, good reviews from Roger Ebert and New York Times and Christian Science Monitor and other local papers. We just felt we needed to have some sort of theatrical presence in order to legitimize it, not just domestically, but also on the foreign side, because like it or not, we are still the arbiters of taste, God forbid, in the world. People may not, it may not be the majority majority of the revenues grossed by a film, but foreign territories look to the domestic sales as an indicator of how well it will do in their territories.
So you're saying about $1 million, and what does it involve? Now, why does distribution companies exist? With the money they have, what do they do?
Well, they basically provide money for prints and for advertising, marketing campaigns. Basically, they put their whole marketing department into play, and you don't have to do anything. I mean, hopefully, there's some left over so that you get a back-end deal, but that's getting to be less and less the case.
And not only that, they actually getting movies into theaters is a bit of a negotiation, and they have a specialty in that.
Well, they really do, Matt. I mean, a good example for us was our experience at the Quad Theater in Greenwich Village in New York. Now, we were playing against four other films, outsourced in its first and only week, as it turns out, outgrossed the total combined grosses of the other four movies, and we were kicked out. Basically, what we were told, and we were told in other markets too, that if outsourced performed well, however they chose to define that, because I don't think they really expected that it would, then we would basically be kept on. Now, I don't know what else we would have had to have done. I think the point, Matt, is that it wouldn't matter what we would have done. The point was is that they had already committed the theater to other movies, but misrepresented it, we believe, to us and our distributor by saying, you just didn't do well enough, when in fact it had already been pre-committed. And I think if you don't have other product, if you don't have that kind of clout, if you don't have the P&A spend, they're basically not going to consider you all that seriously. So if you're outside the distribution system, you're really at a disadvantage not only in securing a theater, but staying in that theater even if it performs well.
All right. Well, all of this makes good sense to me. Now, the one part of this deal that I don't understand is that you have decided to distribute the DVD yourself by selling it on your website.
What we're doing, and this is a very important part of the strategy, what we're selling initially on our website, we can do pre-orders now. Or you can go to our website and actually pre-order it today. The main thing is that what we have now is a preview DVD, okay? The bells and whistles with all of the little add-ons and interviews and all that sort of thing will actually come out in about February, and that version will be available through Blockbuster and Amazon and Netflix and that sort of thing. So we're not turning our back completely on the system.
So you've created a mini distribution company who only has one product, basically.
Right.
Now that you've gotten it all together, it's almost like, why not become a distribution company?
Well, I think we're going to know as much, if not more, than anybody in the country about doing something like this. And I'm not suggesting that I want to do this again, because because it does leave a lot of room for a lot of other things. But at the same time,
And it also is very risky.
It's very, very risky, and our investors certainly understand that. But it's sort of like rock and roll. I mean, we do this thing just to the point where it's sort of falling apart, and then we sort of pull it back together again, and we keep going on.
The movie is outsourced. The producer was Shadowcatcher Entertainment, and now the distributor of the film as well. David Skinner is the owner and operator of Seattle-based Shadowcatcher Entertainment. David, good luck with the film.
Thanks a lot, Matt. Really a pleasure.
Outsourced is now playing in L.A., San Francisco, Berkeley, Palo Alto, San Jose, Eugene, Seattle, Bellevue, and Tacoma, and may still be in Austin. The website is outsourcedthemovie.com. A postscript: NBC has just bought the idea for a TV series based on Outsourced. Had Shadowcatcher sold the film outright, they would have also forgone the big bucks they'll make if the show makes it to the network's lineup. So it seems that their gamble is already starting to pay off. And that's the business. Matt Holzman produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. Our associate producer is Darby Maloney. You can listen to this or any past program online anytime at kcrw.com/thebusiness. You can also podcast the show on KCRW's site or through iTunes. Our email address is thebusiness@kcrw.org. The Business is produced by KCRW Santa Monica and distributed by National Public Radio. I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner. We'll see you next week on The Business.
KCRW offers more than 20 podcasts covering politics, news, music, arts, and culture. For more details, visit kcrw.com.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from Acura, featuring the 286-horsepower TL Type S with Bluetooth phone connectivity. Learn more at acura.com.